Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
That is exactly what I needed to hear.
Thank God someone here knows what they're talking about.
That's us. That's right. Gotta love this American ride.
All right, you need to take the time and get the full picture.
I love the ladies. I mean, they rev my engine, but they don't belong in the newsroom. It is Anchor Man, not Anchor Lady.
What do you want from me? I'm not a Mary, the sweetheart.
Goodness sake, kid. Keep your voice down. Your father's listening to the radio.
I'm not a Mary, the sweetheart.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
I want to go somewhere where I can feel safe. And I just want to thank President Trump and the U.S. government. There's been a lot of silence on this. And now we know the silence has been putting together a brilliant plan.
That's a quarantine passenger of a cruise ship. Still quarantine? Is that what you said, Katie?
Mm-hmm.
We were watching right before we went live here. Fox News had a global map of everywhere that coronavirus has been located. And it got to see Illinois as a red state.
Yeah, first Chicago has a case. 15 cases in the United States total.
Well, I want to get to our guest because I'm interested to see how this is affecting our economy here. Stephen Moore, chief economist at the Heritage Foundation, joins us on a President's Day. Stephen, great to have you on with us.
Hi, Annie. Happy President's Day to you. And, you mentioned the coronavirus. It is impacting the economy negatively. There's no question about it. Stock markets have been jittery for sure now for the last 3 or 4 weeks since this virus broke out. And you know, we got this news last night about the cruise ship with it looks like people were infected. And so, you know, it's a scary situation. You know, China's economy has really been paralyzed by this. So they're shutting down factories. Workers can't go to their jobs. They've got basically martial law there. So this has been, you know, this has been a scary time.
Yeah, you know, I think about how blessed we are to have the strong economy that we do have right now to withstand whatever shakiness that the coronavirus is going to put on the global economy. And certainly the health and the well-being of all these people is a first and foremost concern. You know, there's only so much you can do. You can't just go out and cure the darn thing right away. How does the American economy, in conjunction with the Chinese economy, which you said is like slowing down to a halt, how do you keep moving and continue business as much as you can as usual here on the home front while this is trying to be figured out on a global scale?
Well, first of all, those people who think that socialism is such a wonderful thing, because, you know, what they've got is socialism / communism now in China and central planning. You know, the Chinese have mishandled this public health problem from the very beginning. And the first thing they did, Annie, which is what all communist socialist governments do, is they lie. Right. They lie about they withheld information to the public and to other countries about how severe this was. They've always lied. And whenever you see these statistics, by the way, the Chinese government, you know, Chinese economy grew by 13% last year. Annie, do you believe those statistics for 1 minute?
Yeah.
I mean, they make this stuff up. It's like the old Soviet Politburo. But that's number one. Number two, you know, central plan governments are not very good at protecting public health. We do a great job of this in the United States. We're able to contain these kinds of things in ways that, the communists can't. So a third point I want to make, because it's really relevant. You know, I keep hearing Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and, Mike Bloomberg and all these Democrats attacking our drug companies and our vaccine companies. They're these evil companies, evil profits. If the way we're going to combat this disease by coming up with some kind of a vaccine or a treatment for this. And who's going to do that? It's our drug companies, that are so innovative and find new cures for these things. And I think, there's a good chance sometime in the next, hopefully in a matter of weeks, we'll have some kind of treatment for this. So let's stop villainizing our drug companies that and the pharmaceutical industry that keeps us healthy. And in terms of the economy, you know, I do think as soon as this gets contained, and right now, frankly, we just don't know how long this will go on. But when it is contained, I do think the stock market will bounce right back. And so, you know, let's just pray that we find some kind of a containment of this and maybe a vaccine very soon.
We're talking with Stephen Moore, chief economist at Heritage, also author of the book Trumponomics. Stephen, is there a sense on Wall Street that China is still, like you said, maybe underreporting the numbers, and that's what's so scary? If they would come out and just say, look, this is exactly what's happening, maybe that would ease things a little bit?
Well, you know, we just don't know the numbers because they do lie. That's what the Chinese are very good. I mean, I don't mean the Chinese people. I mean, the Chinese government lies about just about everything. And so that makes people even more fearful because you just don't know how severe this crisis is. But, you know, I have some friends who are over there in Beijing, and they say people are panicked. And there are factories that are closed down, and people can't go to work. And, you know, the government is, you know, heavy-handed there, obviously, because that's what you get when you have a socialist government. Now, you know, the big problem for China, I think, going forward is, you know, a lot of American companies are saying, maybe doing business in China isn't such a great idea. We thought it was so cheap to do business in China. But, you know, if they shut down their operations, you know, we have global supply chains now. China is not as reliable as people thought, and now people are maybe moving some of their factories to, you know, to Vietnam or to India or Japan or Thailand, because you know, it's going to take a long time, I think, for China to recover from this, not just in terms of the public health, but the health of their economy.
Do you see that as being good for the countries just around China, or is this good for the United States too, with the tax cuts?
It's not good for anybody. China's the second largest economy in the world, so they are an important part of the global supply chains. And this is bad. It's bad for everybody. You know, I don't wish ill will for the Chinese. I want them to become more free and healthier. And, you know, I think that this really shows, though, when you have a Stalinistic government, you know, how dangerous this can be. And, you know, you see the pictures of what's going on in China. It's like out of 1984, where they're just, you know, forcibly, you know, taking people out of their homes and things like that. It's really Orwellian in a lot of ways. And let's pray. That's why I get, you know, you can tell I get so tired of these young, you know, millennials saying, oh, socialism, communism are such great systems. You know, they care about they don't care about their people.
Yeah, for sure. We're speaking with Stephen Moore, chief economist at Heritage Foundation. You've advised the president on financial matters for some years now. And I'm reading this report here. This is straight from Axios today. And they tend to be a little moderate, maybe, I don't know, left to center, but they say...
I consider them pretty liberal, but go ahead.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. Well, I'm about to read you something that they said. You can tell me, you can correct it if it needs correcting. It says Trump inherited a steady economy since entered the longest stretch of growth in history. Interest rates remain low. Growth picked up in the wake of the 2017 tax cuts, but now the pace is moderated. They go on to say some aspects of the Trump economy, like wage growth and business investment, pale in comparison to other periods. And this is their summation. This is the thing that I hear a lot of people on the left counter that strong Trump economy. You've written a book called Trumponomics. This is what they say.
Yeah.
Last year, the economy grew at 2.3%. After year-over-year accelerations in 17 and 18, marking the slowest annual growth rate since Trump took office, growth under Trump has yet to hit his oft-promised 3% mark annually. Is that an accurate summation of the economy right now, or are they spinning the numbers?
Well, you know, we did almost hit 3% in 2018. We were not right. It was like 2.92% or something, very close. So, and by the way, the average rate of growth under Obama was like 1.9%. So, you know, we have accelerated growth. But what the big difference is what's happened with wages and incomes. That's the big statistic. You know, incomes are up over $4,000 under Trump. Average incomes. I'm talking about median family incomes are up $4,000. In the United States under Trump in 3 years. In 8 years under Obama, they were only up $1,000. So that's number one. Number two, the big story is the massive increase in job creation. I mean, we now have 6.5 million open jobs in the country. That's never happened before in the history of our country. Mm-hmm. 6.5 million jobs. I mean, think about that. That's probably larger than the entire population of the state of Missouri. So that's a big, big, big number. And, you know, you get this, you know, this is the, what, 10th or 11th year. This, let's see, the recovery began in June of 2009. It was a really, really weak recovery under Obama, the weakest recovery we had had since the Great Depression. And what's happened is Trump has really put his foot, you know, pedal to the metal. Mm-hmm. And now we've got, you know, much faster growth. So, look, it's very difficult for, you know, liberals to find anything to complain about in this economy, really. I mean, you know, you've got the lowest unemployment rate in 50 years, the lowest inflation rate in 50 years, the lowest interest rates in 50 years, the highest wage growth in 20 years. I mean, what's not to like about this picture?
Yeah, I completely understand what you're saying there. And I want to ask you, too, the wage growth, as Axios is reporting here, wage growth and business investment pale in comparisons to other periods. They don't specify which periods they're talking about. Is there anything that exists?
Hold on. Just 1 second.
Sure.
You said something really interesting because it's Axios says in 2019, this was the lowest wage, you know, increase in or lowest growth rate, you know, since Trump mm-hmm. was president. He's only been president for 3 years. Right?
Yeah, and look what he's had to deal with in the midst of that. That was going to be my question. What's taking place right now, if anything, that's keeping the lid on even more success in the economy? Is there anything that could happen or be undone that would just cause this to explode?
So I think there's three things going on, you know, because I was one of the economists, you know, in 2000, when Trump was running for president, who said we could get to 3-4% growth. I think we have the capability of doing that. A lot of the liberal economists, 2% is the best we can do. Well, we've averaged 2.5% growth under Trump. That's not where we want it. We want to be at 3, but it's still a hell of a lot better than where we were. But I think a couple things. One is the trade war with China, which, you know, went on in 2017 and 18 and 19. And Trump, you know, fought the good fight there. And we now have a deal. So that's going to accelerate growth. So, you know, I think everybody applauds Trump getting tough on China. Number two, here's the problem. We don't have enough workers right now. We have some. I always kiddingly tell the president when I see him is, you know, stop creating so many jobs. We don't have enough workers to fill all these jobs. You know, it's a good problem for a country to have. And the third problem is look at the rest of the world, Manny. Look at the rest of the world. Nobody else is growing. Yeah. China's not growing. Japan's not growing. Germany is practically in a recession. Europe is flatlined. You know, everybody's like, what the hell is going on in the United States? Everybody wants to be like us. Because this is where the jobs. Why do you think all these people are lined up in the border trying to get into this country? Because we have jobs.
Great point.
Stephen, in light of that and with the Democratic presidential nomination happening, other than Bernie Sanders, we joke in this studio, what exactly are they proposing for the economy other than socialism?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I have paid attention to a lot of these debates. I haven't watched all of them, but I've kind of listened to what they're saying. And it's really troubling to me. I mean, truly, you know, and I'm not a rah-rah Republican. A lot of things Republicans say I don't like, but I can't think, maybe I'm wrong, maybe you guys can correct me. I can't think of a single idea that they have that would be good for the American economy. Mm-hmm. Really, I can't, you know what, they want to have socialized medicine, they want a Green New Deal, shut down American energy, they want to raise the minimum wage, which would destroy jobs for the lower end starter jobs in the country. You know, they want to create trillions of dollars of new programs. I mean, I could go on and on. I just can't think of a single thing that they would do. They don't, by the way, they don't even talk about growth. I mean, go back and in the last debate, I don't think the word growth even came up.
Are they anti-growth?
What they want, they believe in redistributing wealth, not creating wealth. We as free marketeers say, hey, when you create wealth, you create a booming economy, as John F. Kennedy said, a Democrat, a rising tide lifts all boats. But all they're about is taking money away from people and giving it to other people. That's not an economic growth strategy.
Yeah, I look at the way these Democrats, especially the ones who have been on the debate stage, have approached all of the foreseeable problems that the United States is facing. Generally speaking, I think the problem in and of themselves, a lot of Republicans would say, yeah, we need to do something about that. And it always occurs to me that the way the Democrats try to gain these votes is they try to make the big business, the wealthy people, the man, the capital M man, and the big bad guy, but the little guy on the other side, the voter, is always going to be in the same position, because what they propose, their solution to every single problem, is bigger government in the hands of themselves. So whether you're the man because you're the big corporation, or you're the man because you're the big government, the little guy is still the little guy. You're just supposed to trust Bernie Sanders to solve all your problems instead of yourself.
Well, That's why I brought up, you know, when we started this conversation, I brought up what's going on in China, because they do have a heavy-handed government. They do have the government directing resources. And, you know, they will march into your home and they'll, you know, they will, you know, be so intrusive and basically just deny, you know, the rights that we take for granted in the United States. By the way, you can only get rich in this country, Annie. You can only get rich by giving other people what they want, right? Mm. That's the magic of the free market system. Yeah. If you invent something and you can sell it, you can only sell it to people if they want it, right? And by definition, if I buy something from you and you make a profit on it, we're both better off, or else I wouldn't buy it in the first place. I mean, that's why Bill Gates and Warren Buffett and all these people like Fred Smith of FedEx and you know, Zuckerberg, we should herald these people as great, you know, Americans who, mm-hmm. who've created trillion. Do you know we have four companies in America that now have $1 trillion of market capitalization? Think of the massive numbers of Americans who've made money off the stock of these companies, who bought the products. Why would we demonize these people? I don't even get the logic of it.
Yeah, I think it's a power struggle, and we're watching it on full display here with the Democratic primary. Stephen Moore, I want to encourage people to go check out your book, Trumponomics, Inside the America First Plan to Revive Our Economy. You can read about what went down, and I think we're all enjoying it a little bit if we have a 401k to peek
it
at.
It sure is. We're working.
Yep, absolutely. We'll talk to you again next week, Stephen. Thank you so much.
Okay. Take care.
Yep, bye-bye. I love talking to him, and I know where he's coming from. But this is an Axios report. This is the lead story in Axios today. I like to read Axios because I don't feel like it's just trying to, like, spoon-feed me the things that I want to hear. I like to hear the other side. And I do hear people talk about, well, what about wage growth? According to Axios, some aspects of the Trump economy, like wage growth and business investment, pale in comparison to other periods. And listening to the way that Stephen Moore can make sense of those types of statements, it gives you more context to a piece of economic fact, math, that exists. Good conversation with Stephen Moore, their chief economist at Heritage Foundation. Let's take a quick break and get to some phone calls as well. 314-241-9797. 314-241-9797. We'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to The Annie Fry Show.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. It took us a long way to get to this song. Katie, I'm like, there's a band called Presidents of the United States of America or something. What is the actual band's name?
That's it.
Yeah. Presidents of the
Presidents
USA?
Presidents of the United States of America.
That is the longest brand name in the history of band names.
It's one of the worst also, but it's memorable.
So
I didn't remember it.
You guys were talking about it for a long time before I walked in. Yeah.
Well, we were trying to figure it out, and I was trying to figure out what to Google, and I'm like, I know that they were big in the 90s, and I said, there's some songs that I know that we know. And Katie's like, presidents. And then
America.
And then Ryan walks in. He's like, oh, yeah, presidents. And I'm like, what? Do they sing anything? They sing something we know. He's like, yeah, Lump.
And Peaches.
Millions of Peaches. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why is that song not out there? It's the Presidents of the United States. Why is there not a Trump song? And if there is, please tweet at Annie Fry Show and share it with me. Yep.
Trump lingered last. I wonder how much you'd have to change to make it Trumpian. Not much.
Man.
It'd be pretty easy.
Yeah, we got some real treats for you and the bump music coming up here, too.
Mm-hmm.
Did anybody catch the last one? I know we did. I'm just sort of putting it out there to the audience if anybody caught the last one.
Yeah, they did.
It was a song by the Nixons.
Oh, no. That was that last one?
Yeah, that was that
Sisters,
one.
Sisters, yeah.
We got some comments about was it Glycerine that we played?
Mm-hmm.
Bush.
Yep.
We were like trying to throw this together.
We're trying.
We're like,
yep.
We're just like naming words that have to do with presidents. and this is what we've come up with, so I hope you enjoy it. It actually probably is the hardest thing we've worked on in 3 weeks.
Yeah. All three of us were back there just like, what is another song?
Other than getting into that some moose costume. Man, I took some heat for that over the weekend.
Did you?
Oh, man.
People love you.
No. My friends hate me more. They were ruthless.
No.
They started a group chat about how horrible it was that I got in that moose costume.
That's are they mad at awesome. Us? Or are they
I think they're mad
of you?
Overall at the... Here, I'll just read this. You can tell me how dripping with sarcasm this is.
Okay.
They say the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. They are wrong. Insanity is that moose costume.
Oh!
It's still in the office. You want to go get it?
No.
I think the people loved it. I think there was a lot of people that really loved it, and those outweigh the people that didn't like it.
Here's the part about the moose costume that I have really enjoyed. There has been there's a little bit of playful, you know, elbow nudge towards Ryan Wiggins on this station. And I think the moose costume actually garnered you some pity.
As long as
outspoken,
I'm gaining ground somewhere.
Emotion towards Ryan and support for Ryan.
You think people looked at that and said, man, this poor
soul.
SOB.
This poor soul.
I don't know. Read us more of your friends' text messages.
They're all like that. They're all pretty much saying, is this not the funniest thing that could ever have happened?
No, ever.
With the most sarcasm possible.
We got a lot of comments from people on our social media and also in life here, the interactions that we've had over the past weekend of people who loved it. We had people showing up at Hardee's like, where's the moose costume? When does this happen? That's why they came.
People were commenting.
You did that.
In the Facebook
I give
live.
People what they want.
You're a compelling character.
I do anything you tell me to do.
Darn right. You do it with a
you
smile,
say jump,
sir.
I say, how high?
Somebody's making money.
Is that song from something else?
Yeah. It's a folk song. Yeah. I can't put my finger on it, but it's just some old,
maybe.
Like,
grease. There's an unwelcome sight in the neighborhood. A developer is being greedy. There's a hole in the sky where a tree once stood. Such
like
a lack of life and sound.
Like the reason
all
I know
that's
it.
Left is bare, muddy ground. A magnificent tree was murdered.
She cares a lot.
The mighty dollar cut it down. There's a hole in the sky where the tree once was. Somebody's making money. Stand up. There's a hole in the sky where the tree once was. Somebody's making money.
I don't follow the plot of that song.
There's a
hole
in the
sky and
the
there's
tree
a tree
once was.
And people are making money on it somehow.
It's a really big tree.
And corporate greed.
And it wasn't just somebody recording that on their iPhone. She recorded that like with a multi-track mixer. That's a pretty good recording for somebody standing outside of a protest
so, like,
city hall.
It was a local public meeting. She was like at the podium.
Oh, so it's their feed.
She had background
that they,
singers.
I don't know.
Yeah, it sounded pretty good.
Can you find out more information?
Sure.
I would
maybe
love
I was
to do
a little
that.
Delinquent in my interest to what she was actually talking about. I just couldn't believe it. I hear a shimmy in her voice when she's talking. All right, lady. But again, I reiterate that the man standing next to her in this protest is wearing a Seattle Seahawks shirt, a T-shirt. He probably paid $25 for it, made by a child in China. And I don't know. Maybe the NFL makes everything in the United States.
I have no idea.
Nor do I.
Somebody's making money.
I just want to know who's making money. I kind of support the overall, like, hey, if people are making backroom deals and somebody's making money off of these things, we need to call that out. But I have no idea what she's talking about. There's a hole in the sky and
a tree
was. That sounds like somebody from space shot that tree.
This is really about Space Force and Trump.
This just in from Tony Colombo. As a fellow victim of the moose, I can assure you there is no good that comes from it.
That's why he's not on the show anymore.
Oh, quit. Man. I guess I got to keep dressing up as the moose if I'm going to stay on the show.
Tony, the moose costumes are in our office. You are welcome to come here at any time or get anybody to put them on and join us.
Based on his text.
We should have a standing rule. The moose costume can be in our office. Anybody can come in and say whatever they want from our coworkers as long as you're wearing the moose costume. Because how serious can you be in a moose costume?
Pretty serious. I think we did a whole break about John Durham and the
I asked
Harlots
Ryan. Ryan couldn't handle wearing it in the studio anymore on Friday, and he had it just like he unzipped. It's like a big like a it's a onesie, but not like a baby onesie. It's like a PJ's
type of
warm
thing, yeah.
Hood that looks like a moose. But he zipped it down and he just took the top, like his arms out of it and was laying down. And I was begging him because the Glover Show was working in the studio right across from us in the window. I was begging him to take his shirt off because he would look like a centaur.
And it would have been great. I'm reading up about this.
Tony, you can do that too.
This is an actual tree murder song. And it was performed by a group of people.
The original song?
Oh, this was a cover of the original. Yep,
it's called the Tree Murder Song.
Oh, how'd they come up with that?
And Its big debut is the Seattle City Council's Land Use and Neighborhoods Committee.
But I still feel is still something else.
It's just an old folk song, I think. And she butchers it. You can tell that it's supposed to go over and over, and she doesn't stay with it. I think she got nervous.
Yeah.
I would if I were standing in City Hall with a guitar.
We're going to speak at 1:40, so in about 6 minutes or so, with Dr. Tom Tartar. He is a nationally recognized surgeon, and he's running against Dick Durbin. He's in a primary, and there are some other people running too, and we will be talking to some of the other candidates as well as we get closer to this primary, but they reached out to us. Dr. Tom Tartar wants to take out Dick Durbin. Can you imagine? Like, if it's Tartar or if it's anybody else who's running, or, you know, Ryan, you live in Illinois, you could run. I'd vote for you over Dick Durbin. Can you imagine if Dick Durbin lost?
Be amazing. Tom Tartar needs a clever line that people are going to remember to vote for him. Like, something smells fishy. We better get some tartar on this.
What?
Nope, that's not it.
That I'm just suggesting that that's an option.
I'm just thinking aloud.
Maybe put that in the same realm of thoughts that our boss asked you to, which is,
if you want to.
Not out loud. Our boss listens to the worst 5 minutes of our show every time.
Yes.
It's like, if we do something and it fails miserably, we're like, we should just say hi, Steve, on the air. Because it's guaranteed to be the 5 minutes that he was driving from here to his next appointment.
Yes.
And sorry. Our apologies. Not our best. Not our worst. But, you know, maybe you can tune into that one. That's coming up. So we're going to speak with Dr. Tartar, who's running for the United States Senate to unseat Dick Durbin at 1:40. And then Hans von Spakovsky, which I'm really excited to talk to Hans about this, because the Andy McCabe thing, along the lines of what Katie was saying here, this is complicated. And this is involving intelligence and investigations and indictments that are happening or are not happening. And John Durham is in the middle of this criminal investigation into the genesis of the Russia collusion story. There's all of this stuff going on. And it's like, if one detail slips out the cracks to the American people, we're not going to indict Andy McCabe on this specific issue. And everyone's like, oh, the sky is falling, the sky is falling. Is this a really big deal? Or is he not going to be indicted on this, but he could be indicted on that? Is he not going to be indicted on anything because he's been given immunity and he's going to talk? Is William Barr a softy and now deciding to go easy on the Russian investigation? I don't think that is what is happening here. I don't see that as the obvious outcome of where William Barr and Durham are taking the story.
The Trey Gowdy clip that you played a couple segments ago, he said something in there that really stuck out to me, and it wasn't the substance of what he was talking about. He said, I'm sure that Durham is blah, 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 blah. That was really key to me. That means that Durham is doing this thing completely separate from politics, which is exactly the way it needs to be, and it needs to continue that way until he makes it public.
Well, let's take a quick break. So we come back, we can speak with a man who is running for the United States Senate. He is running in the primary that would eventually pick somebody to go up against Dick Durbin. God, that would be amazing to get rid of Dick Durbin. Seriously. Let's all rally. Let's all rally for taking... What is he now? Is he number two in the Democratic Party?
I don't know.
I think he's the majority whip.
He's certainly up there. He's been there a long time.
There's Schumer, and then there's Dick Durbin. They're the two senators that tend to be at the forefront of the Democratic Party in the Senate, which are the minority whip, obviously, because he's in the Senate.
Duh.
Minority whip? Did you Google it?
I am Googling it.
Are you Googling it? Tom Tartar catchphrases?
I was looking up Hugh Jackman films.
Okay. Let us know. We can talk about that. Wolverine, when we come back, with Tom Tartar running for Senate. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Annie Fry Show.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Then what the hell am I doing here tonight?
Now you can't always get what you want. Say it.
Yeah.
Say it.
I think last week we were talking about the Rolling Stones and how I didn't know anything about it. I go, oh, what's the song Trump ends all his rallies in? It's like, can't always get what you want. And they're like, what is it called? I don't even know what it's called. Is that what it's called?
You can't always get what you want. By the Rolling Stones.
To my point. I'm like, who sings that? And Ren's like, the Rolling Stones. And I'm like, yep.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm a Martian. I understand it. I'm okay with it. I know a lot about other things. I don't know much about the Rolling Stones. But I appreciate it. I'm surprised they let him play that.
They have to. Contractually, they don't own most, as with any band. I mean, there's been tons of bands who have gone through this with presidents, especially Republican presidents. They don't want them to use their music.
Yeah.
And but they don't own it. So Rolling Stones technically don't own that song. They own the rights to that song. They don't own the recording of that song. Isn't that fascinating? There you go.
Anyway, I want Trump to come to the state of Illinois because I think that there is a fever pitch of anger and rebellion just simmering under the surface in the state of Illinois because we are overtaxed. We're enjoying an amazing economy statewide. And then the Illinois Democrats just stomp all over it. And we have to enjoy a version of the prosperity that the Trump economy has brought to the entire country. And you look at if you look top down in the state of Illinois of what this unfettered access to control that the Democrats have been given and what they are willing to do with this state in the midst of it, it's insane. Well, Dick Durbin is up for re-election here in 2020. And, you know, I don't know. Is he replaceable? He's pretty high up there. But I think AOC didn't know that she had something coming. And she took down, I think, the number four Democrat in the House of Representatives. And Dr. Tom Tartar is looking to try to do that to Dick Durbin. Take the Dick Durbin seat away from the Democrats. Give it to the Republicans. I'd say the tax-paying individuals of the state of Illinois. And he joins us now. Dr. Tom Tartar, great to have you on the show with us today. Thanks for the time.
Thank you, Annie. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
So, the opportunity.
Tell me, you're a nationally recognized surgeon. You want to defeat Dick Durbin. That's a pretty tall order. What has compelled you to go from doing what you've done, being very successful in life, to saying, Dick Durbin needs to go and I'm the guy to do it?
Well, look, Annie, I love what I do as a cancer surgeon. I'm good at it. But I just can't tolerate what the Democrats are planning for healthcare in this country, which is going to be the number one issue in the general election.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from that, we have to have immigration reform in this country. And, we have to have secure borders. We have to change our immigration laws. We need to secure our country. So for those reasons, there was nobody with name recognition and money in this race. Believe me, I looked around. We're a political family. And we have supported with our money and our time the Sangamon County Republican Party, where Springfield is located,
mm-hmm.
for many years. My wife is a precinct committeeman. My young son just graduated from high school, and he wanted his own precinct. And so we're always looking around to see who we are going to support, and there was nobody. And so I just thought, you know, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, step into the gap
I've never held or sought public office before. I've been elected to some high positions within medical organizations, but never in the public.
So you're an outsider.
I'm an outsider. Well, usually that's an applause line when mm-hmm. I talk to people.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Ryan is an Illinois voter and giving you an applause there here from in studio. We're speaking with Dr. Tom Tartar, who is running for the United States Senate seat currently held by Dick Durbin. We'll have a primary coming up and then the general in November. I want to ask you this question because this is near and dear to me.
Sure.
I've watched very closely over the last probably 6 years the state of Illinois tried to win Republican races, and in my opinion, we lose races because we don't act Republican. And I don't know if the state I don't know if the state of Illinois is willing to accept what a Republican actually is. So I want to ask you two questions. This is twofold. There's an A and a B here. First, who is the Illinois Republican voter? And second of all, how do you reflect that for the state across Chicago all the way down to Metropolis?
Okay, so I'm going to give you a two-part answer.
Okay.
I am the only candidate, Republican candidate for United States Senator, who has done internal polling throughout the state. I hired a polling company that polls for the RNC, and their polling has been credited with getting Republican statewide candidates elected in blue states. So it's a really good, valid poll. Among voters, Republican voters most likely to vote in the primary, Trump's favorable is 85%. That's pretty consistent with other national polls among Republicans who are most likely to vote. So first of all, there's a large Trump segment. But if you look at my polling results, about, I don't know, maybe 40% identified with Trump, about 30% with the Tea Party, and the rest is traditional Republicans. But even among all those groups, Trump is polling at 85%. Okay, mm-hmm. So that's who the Republican voter is in Illinois. The Republican voters want immigration reform, they want public safety, and they want a growing economy. You know, so that's okay. Who they are, and that's what they want.
Okay, Dr. Tarter, now I have a two-part question. This is Ryan.
Oh my God.
So here we go. Get into politics.
We need charts or something here.
We're putting you through the gauntlet here.
Good.
Okay, first is just, can you list some of the Metro East cities that you would be representing in your districts for people who want to know, you know, is this my guy? Would I be voting for him in November? Second, the district that you're running in against Dick Durbin, I imagine because he's such a powerful person in Congress that he is, he's a senator. I'm all messed up.
It's a statewide election.
Yeah. I'm totally messed up.
Yeah.
So you tripped me up. Congratulations. You win.
No, I do think it's interesting, though, to look at how Dick Durbin, his stature. He's the minority whip in the Senate. He's a huge name. He seems.
Oh, he's been there forever.
Is the RNC, National RNC, taking this race seriously at all?
No, not at all. Not unless the polling gets very close, you know, say within the margin of error, 3-4% or something like that, then they'll get serious. But no, we're being pretty much blown off and being blown off by.
I think that's the real. You know, I think that's the Illinois Republican voter, though. I mean, that's how I feel.
No,
in general.
I don't think so.
Tell me who in the state of Illinois right now, like from a party standpoint, is actually looking at the Republican voters who could be a broadening base because the taxpayer burden is so ridiculous. I feel like we're screaming for help and looking for somebody to lead us away from this overrule that we have right now from the Democratic control in the state.
Okay, let me answer one part of one question. I would represent the people of Belleville, O'Fallon, Swansea, Redbud. Love Redbud.
Can you do that at the same time and represent the Republicans in Chicago?
The Republicans in Chicago, believe it or not, I'm up here right now. I've been staying in Schaumburg. The Republicans are more united this year. And you know why? Because we're tired of being pushed around by the liberal left. They're particularly frustrated in the collar counties that have now been populated by people who left Chicago for better neighborhoods, better schools, better everything that the Republicans provided.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a great deal of frustration among the Republicans in the collar counties. So no, there's going to be a red wave sweeping across the heartland, including Illinois. Now, can that be enough to overwhelm Chicago? Probably not. But we got a little divine intervention. And that is that Willie Wilson, this very generous former, he's the son of a sharecropper, okay? But he's a multimillionaire, highly successful guy, very generous, ran against Rahm Emanuel in his last mayoral run. And he's run for governor a couple of times. Well, he doesn't want Dick Durbin to be reelected, and he's going to run as an independent in the U.S. senatorial race. That may open the door because he is absolutely loved in the South and West Ends of Chicago. He's been so generous there, and he really is a super nice guy.
What is Dick Durbin doing for the Illinois voter right now? Like, why would Democrats Is it just the name recognition? What does Dick Durbin offer his voters, the people who have put him there for so long?
I honestly don't know. He really is for open borders and sanctuary jurisdictions. That appeals to the far left wing of his party. He's pro-abortion until the last minute or even after birth. He appeals to the far left wing of his party. He has really changed over the years. So he really does pander to where the party is going rather than he's not leading the party. He's following where the party goes.
Yeah, I see he seems very predictable in office and he has seemed unchallenged.
I think if I am the nominee, which I'm very well positioned to be, I think my campaign, honestly, will appeal to independents, some conservative Democrats, and, of course, Republicans of all stripes. I want to fix the immigration problem. And then all the other boxes are checked, you know. We've supported Right to Life forever. If you go to on YouTube to Tartar Life, you can see my young son give a talk at the Illinois Capitol Rotunda a year ago. Mm. We are members of the NRA. So all the boxes are checked. But really, what we really need to do is fix immigration, support the president's policies on the economy with low taxes and regulatory relief. And the number one issue in the general election is going to be health care. And I want the Republicans with me to lead on reducing the cost of health insurance and health care. The president's doing his best, but I will not expect to be endorsed by the American Hospital Association or the Illinois Hospital Association or Big Pharma or anything like that. Because these people need to be confronted and lower cost has to be mandated in law. The president is trying to do that with the transparency rule in pricing, but the American Hospital Association spent $20 million lobbying against that rule, and now it's tied up in the courts. Hmm. And it's just transparency. It's like saying, here's what the price is, because people don't know the value of their health care dollars, and as long as we don't know, prices vary by 400% of Medicare fee-for-service in most cities.
Yeah.
And there's no reason for that.
Let me ask you a quick question, because I got to get going here in a minute. But
getting too much of the weeds,
no,
aren't I?
No, you're fine. We're speaking with Dr. Tom Tarter, nationally recognized surgeon and running against Dick Durbin for the United States Senate seat. You said some complimentary things towards President Trump. I want to know, 85% approval rating, I think it's 95% with the GOP as a whole, higher. He's 10% down in the state of Illinois. Is there anything about this president that you criticize or think that he needs to change?
No, I've been asked, I was on a liberal talk show last summer during Republican Day at the state fair. And he's a really nice guy, good guy on the radio. And we were having a pretty detailed conversation. And I knew the question was going to come. And he said, okay, with President Trump at the top of the ticket, how's that going to affect your race? And I said, if you needed surgery and you had the most skilled surgeon in the world for that particular surgery, but he had a bad bedside manner, would you still want him to operate on you?
Yeah,
and he said yes.
That's a great point. You got him to say yes. That's fantastic. Well, I'd encourage people to go to drtarter.com, T-A-R-T-E-R, and learn more about your candidacy for the United States Senate. And we appreciate the opportunity to speak with you here today. And we'll be watching, see how this goes.
Thank you so much, Annie.
Yep, absolutely.
Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Dr. Tom Tarter, like I said, nationally recognized surgeon, trying to take out Dick Durbin. Boy, would that be just a little cherry on top? No, that would be the whole Sunday for me. In November. We'll be right back with Hans von Spakovsky on Andy McCabe and his non-indictment in just a minute.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.